My name is Ben Burrell, and this is Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that brings you an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. This is episode 3 on Blonde on Blonde. Hope you've been enjoying the series so far. Little disclaimer, at the start of this episode, I recorded and mixed this with an ear infection, and quite a bad ear infection as well. Just thought I'd put that in because it turns out, when you're exclusively dealing in audio, an ear infection is quite the thing to scupper your plans. I'm 99% sure it sounds okay, but I'm still very much in the eye of the storm of that ear infection, so I can never tell. So rather than delay putting it out, I thought I'd put it out right now. But as I say, I'm sure it sounds absolutely fine. But, you know, I thought I'd put a disclaimer in just for quality reasons anyway. Just before we crack on with this episode, let's say hello to some people who have recently subscribed on Patreon. You can support the show, show your love for it, keep the show going by subscribing on Patreon. It costs like the price of a pint in London every single month. And you get loads of bonus content on there as well, including an episode every other week. And also, there's quite a few bonus episodes coming up as well. So it'll be every other week as a bare minimum. You can get involved in the link in this episode's description. Hello to Matthew Bullis, who's done that. Hi to Fred Trumiller. Hi to Hugo Kano. Hi to Andrew B. Hi Martin Banhoff. Hi Gary Furs. Yeah, hi to Gary Furs. Hi to Carl Jones. Hi to Alex Ellison. Hello to Marv. Hi to Emmanuel Hom. And hi to Craig Kayla too. As I say, the link to Bob Dylan Album by Album Extra, the Patreon show, is in this episode's description. Without further ado, let's get to episode 3 in this series. We have a look at the next two songs on the album, a couple of brilliant, brilliant tunes, and we also have a look at that thin, wild Mercury sound as we go back to 1966's Blonde on Blonde.
Well, early in the morning, till late at night, I got a poison headache, but I feel all right. I'm pledging my time to you, hoping you'll come through too.
With Blonde on Blonde, Dylan did so much. One of the first rock double albums, an album that contains some of his best songs, an album that comes hot off the heels of some genre-altering classics, and an album that was commercially successful too. But for me, the real thing that sets Blonde on Blonde apart from other albums is its sound. Highway 61 was an idiosyncratic record. That tack piano and surrealist lyrics and rock and roll production meant it is forever a classic, but also a clearly sonically defined one too. Blonde on Blonde, though, goes a step further. It, like Highway 61, recalls other genres, updating and manipulating them. But it also has something not of this world, a curious sound that almost ceases to exist outside of its 14 tracks, that famous thin, wild Mercury sound. I was going at tremendous speed at the time of my Blonde on Blonde album, Bob told Rolling Stone editor and publisher Jan Wenner in 1969. It's the closest I've ever got to that sound that I hear in my mind, that thin, wild Mercury sound. Even his description of it is unlike anything we've heard, the sound of Mercury. It's quite apt though, and it does make a lot of sense when you listen to the record. Not only is it an album that is mercurial, but also Mercury, the element itself, has that shimmery, sludgy look. For me, that's the sound that bursts out of every seam of this record. In my mind, it's a burnt, yellowy, almost nicotine-like stain, but somehow glistening. It, at times, sounds like a reflection of gold. It's fragile but not weak. There's some substance to it, but it glides slickly and quickly. It's a strange mix of rock and roll, the surreal Chicago blues and psychedelic country. There's novelty songs and torch songs and love, lots of love, and a fair share of alienation too. It in places is burnt out, and there's a manic energy that passes through it. At times, it feels like we're hearing from someone who is at the end of something exhausting and transformative, which of course, for the most part, we were. It's also impossible to actually take apart the sound of the record because at times it's almost indescribable. It starts with the guitars. They are bluesy and electric for the most part. They play the biggest role in that thin, wild Mercury sound. They track as if they've been beamed in from an old blues tune. They cut and jag, played roughly at points.
Where these visions of Johanna have not taken.
my plea.
It's also a change from the previous record's guitar sound. That was a little more polished rock than the updated blues we have here. On that previous record, they often featured a little reverb and a little more tone. Listen to the guitar-only track from Like a Rolling Stone and hear how it differs from Blonde on Blonde. Of course, there are variations on the Blonde on Blonde LP, but for large sections of the record, it's that scratchy blues guitar sound. It's not just the guitar, though, that sounds thin.
It's like the whole thing has had its EQ tweaked to lose all the bass, like the whole LP has been filtered through something.
But that's kind of the genius of it. It hasn't. If it had had that, it would sound thin, like you just heard. But this is a thin, nimble, compact sound that still somehow packs a punch. Like I say, it's thin, but it's never weak. Take a normal guitar sound, for example. It can sound fuzzy. It can sound full of reverb. It can have a pedal effect on it to manipulate the sound. However, here on this record, it's clean. It sounds like the blues, but it's supercharged. There's almost a uniqueness and genius in its simplicity. It's the same for Al Kooper's organ. Here is its common tone at the start of a Stuck Inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues Again rehearsal take. And here it is shimmering on an alternative take of I Want You.
I want you. I want you so bad. Honey, I want you.
And here it is shining on another alternative take, this time of Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands.
With your murky eyes in the months that climb and your eyes that smoke.
Its tone varies during the songs, but like the guitars, it's subtle yet full of quality. Once again, it's thin, but not weak. For me, though, the real star of the album is the drums. I love the drums throughout Blonde on Blonde. Bobby Gregg on One of Us Must Know is a fine performance, but Kenneth Buttery clinches it on Stuck Inside a Mobile with the Memphis Blues Again. The drums' tandem performance with Al Kooper's organ is a record highlight for me.
And I say, oh, come on now. You know about my debutante. And she says your debutante just knows what you need. But I know what you want.
Let's raise the levels of both those instruments to fully appreciate their performance.
Really be the end to be stuck inside a mobile with the Memphis Blues again. Now the bricks lay on Grand Street where the neon madmen climb. They all fall there so perfectly. It all seems so well timed.
In fact, the whole instrumentation of this song is a high watermark not only for this album, but this era. I love the slick, pacey sound and how the lead guitar gives a little flourish in the left ear, sounding like a ribbon dancing in the wind. I love the descending bass riff teamed with Buttery playing on the bell cymbal for the song's reoccurring instrumental section. And we haven't even mentioned Dylan's top-tier performance in the song as well. But with regards to the whole of the album, it's the drums I keep coming back to time and time again. The clattering start to Most Likely You Go Your Way and I'll Go Mine. The snaking rattle to Obviously Five Believers. And the dainty fills on Just Like a Woman They give the songs a zip and a swagger. It's different to a lot of other Dylan albums at this point. Of course, the drums played their role on Highway 61 and Bringing It All Back Home, but they felt more conservative on those records. Here they bring a little more energy to the songs. Compare the drums on a song like Just Like Tom Thumb's Blues.
And your gravity fails and negativity don't pull you through.
To some of the fills on show here.
When Ruthie says, come see her in a honky-tonk lagoon where I can watch her waltz for free.
In fact, even going a step further, just to show how important those drums are, compare this song to a more conservative take, Take 13, and we see just what a difference the drums make.
Now the senator came down here with showing everyone his gun, handing out free tickets to the wedding of his son. And I nearly...
For me here, it's the percussion that provides a necessary edge to make the final song what it is. That paired with a little bit of pace revolutionises this particular track. The track itself, Stuck Inside a Mobile, was cut on Bob's fourth day of the sessions in Nashville. As we've heard on a previous episode of this podcast, a manuscript from the day which was part typed, part handwritten, contained early ideas for the song. The typewritten part at the top of the page looks like it was a product of a free association exercise at the typewriter. Dylan just wrote words and phrases like Mama Memphis Blues and People Just Get Uglier, Honky Tonk and Black Lagoon, Waltz and Neither Pandemonium, spelt wrongly, Moon, Oversexed and Boston Debutantes and Neon and White Medicine and 20 pounds of headlines lying on his. And at the end of that last phrase, Dylan wrote in handwriting, chest. Like we've seen a lot already, these songs are very much still being found whilst recording in the studio. Below the type section, he had begun to develop the Mama Memphis Blues idea, writing, Oh Mama, you are in Mobile, Alabama with the Memphis Blues again. Oh Mama, I'm stuck without a friend. These Memphis Blues are bound to drive me mad. Judging by those early words, the origin of this song is another ugly, messy scene. We've touched upon it in the song Pledging My Time, but this feels even worse. This recalls the Nightmare of Desolation Row, or Highway 61's title track, with the lonely alienation of Visions of Johanna thrown in for good measure. Our narrator is stuck, trapped in a place he doesn't want to be, alienated from the world. It begins with, Oh, the ragman draws circles up and down the block. I'd ask him what the matter was, but I know that he don't talk. The ragman is a person who collects or deals in rags, old clothes or other items. He is dishevelled, and the line about him drawing circles makes it sound like he has gone mad. A great definition of madness, often attributed to Einstein, is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, which sounds exactly like our ragman. This is also possibly a reference to the Joseph Conrad novel Secret Agents, where a character is forced to draw circles. Conrad would also be a touchpoint for Dylan later, most notably on the Desire album. At the end of the verse, our narrator confirms they are trapped. But deep inside my heart, I know I can't escape, Dylan sings. Later we recall Desolation Row's cast of broken characters, as we do a lot on this album, as we hear Shakespeare's In the Alley. We also hear about a lying French girl, a dead grandpa, a preacher, and many, many others. Our narrator is caught in this place, stuck with these reprobates and absurd terrors. I love the little two-verse run where Dylan plays with the lyrics, mixing the words of each final line to bring an absurd nature to them. We get lines like, I would send a message to find out if she talked, but the post office has been stolen and the mailbox is locked. Not the post office is locked and the mailbox is stolen, but the post office has been stolen and the mailbox is locked. Later we hear of a railroad man who smoked his eyelids and punched his cigarette. Not punched his eyelids and smoked his cigarette. While not the most esoteric genius use of language, this little trick does a brilliant job of introducing you to this dreamlike existence that the song lives in. Just like in a dream, it's almost real, just about plausible, but there's something a little off with these lines, a little not quite right, brought on by that quick word exchange. Dylan's decision to only change one or two words is perfect. It's just enough to knock the whole song into left field without being too far out. While our narrator is stuck in this alienation, there does appear to be an exit point. And here I sit so patiently, waiting to find out what price you have to pay to get out of going through all these things twice, Dylan sings on the final verse, before once again pleading, oh mama, is this really the end, to be stuck inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues again. It's a song about being stuck, about finding it difficult to get out of whatever you're in, unable to break out of behaviour, perhaps, unable to change things for the better. Once again, you ask yourself, is this the end? Am I stuck here forever? Is this it? Alienation is found everywhere on Blonde on Blonde. From that acceptance of being an outsider whilst being chastised on Rainy Day Women, to visions of Johanna's reflection of something or someone our narrator can't get to this feeling of immobility. Like Dylan tells us on the third track of the album, we're often hearing about a little boy that is lost. There's also a sense that Dylan might have been battling depression. All the feelings in those songs I've just mentioned hint at it. They hint at what we know now in these times are classic signs of depression, especially those lines about Black Lagoon listed as the origins of Stuck Inside a Mobile. Bob even sings about a black dog, the classic slang expression for depression. This happens on track 13, obviously Five Believers, with the lines, I got my black dog barking, yes, he is now, yes, it is. Outside my yard, yes, I could tell you what he means if I just didn't have to try so hard. Often on Blonde, Dylan, as our narrator, is stuck. And he's stuck, albeit on different surroundings, on I Want You. This is a song that deals with another major album theme, love. It's a desire song, a love song of want, and more than that, it's a huge, huge pop tune.
Sighs, the lonesome organ grinder cries, the silver saxophones say I should refuse you.
Dylan is backed on the track by Buttery on drums, Moss on electric guitar, McCoy on acoustic guitar, Robbins on piano, Strelecki on bass, and Cooper on organ. Cooper finalised an orchestral bell sound he wanted to use as the organ riff just before the song was recorded. It's one of many good choices he makes on the record. There's so many good performances on this track. In the studio on the song's fourth take, Moss played a run on his acoustic guitar at the end of one of the choruses. Cooper immediately picked up on it. He remembers, right at that point, Wayne played this like 16-note run, and I'd never heard anyone play like that before. For those that don't know, including me, a 16-note run is a little run that doesn't necessarily stay with the song. It's a little bit of showboating, shall we say. Cooper continues explaining, so I stopped and I said, can you do that every time? And he said, sure. And I said, boy, that'd be great, Wayne. And I was just thinking to myself, boy, they can't do this in New York. I mean, I couldn't believe he played it. Whilst there are great performances in this song, for me, Dylan's performance is pretty special too. The delivery is in the same mode as Subterranean Homesick Blues. Bob stylishly glides his way through the tempoed lines in a proper poetic display. In fact, he hammers each line. All this reaches a climax on the song's bridge. You can tell a song is a melodic masterclass when the bridge is packed with melody. It slides into the song, remaining fiercely melodic, before adding a bit of grit, then to only be released into that addictive chorus once again, all aided by piano and that great-sounding acoustic guitar part.
The straightforward chorus lyric in this song was so straightforward it wasn't even included in Dylan's manuscript. Perhaps it was a last-minute addition. Also missing is the third verse in that original manuscript. Once again, the writing came right down to the wire on this one. While the chorus is straightforward, the verses again contain a fever dream cast of characters. There's a guilty undertaker, a lonesome organ grinder, the drunken politician of course, the Queen of Spades, and a dancing child in a Chinese suit. It's another murky, dreamlike world where words like cries, sighs, cracked, washed out, and scorn are all thrown at us in the opening verse alone.
Later we hear of broken cups and that drunken politician and weeping mothers. These are images we've heard from Dylan a lot at this point of his career. And with that motorcycle crash looming on the horizon, it feels like a reflection of his state of mind and that possible depression from earlier. But there's some lightness here too. Desire is of course found on that chorus of I Want You. It feels like a different place to the verses. In the verses, the world is crazy and strange. The chorus, though, is different. The narrator can get away from all that with his love, with his object of desire. In those verses, we hear that descending melody we've heard so many times on this podcast. It really is a Dylan favourite. The bass part highlights that melody's descension. It goes down and down and down as we fall into this strange world documented in the lyrics. Eventually, though, this is lifted out by the chorus. And with this musically, we are lifted out too. We return to where we started on the verse with the F note before the descension begins again. It's like the chorus becomes a breath of fresh air, snatched quickly with that F note before we're back with the verses, almost drowning in this crazy world. But it's not all quite so black and white. At times, our narrator feels engulfed by this strange place he inhabits. In amongst all those drunk politicians and distressed mothers, Dylan tells us that saviours are fast asleep. He also tells us he's drinking from that broken cup, which for me feels like he's in a place of spiritual darkness. The broken cup line feels like he's trying to fill his life with something, something that's supposed to give him life and health, but it isn't working anymore. He can't get enough of it. The cup is leaking. That saviours are fast asleep line again has alienation looming all over it. Like our narrator is on his own. There's no cavalry coming to help him out. The other people in this song aren't in a good way either. Dylan talks of there being no true love in the people he sees. He sings, "Well, now all my fathers, they've gone down. True love, they've been without it." But our narrator himself is still searching for that true love as he sings of his desire in the chorus. This might not actually be love or desire itself, perhaps a spiritual awakening, or even just a contented life, or perhaps, like we've seen before, he's just looking for comfort away from this strange world. Either way, he's looking to get out, to get to somewhere better, which is also present in the lines of, "She knows where I'd like to be, but that doesn't matter." Elsewhere, those strange lines on the verse continue, as Dylan sings, "Now your dancing child with his Chinese suit, he spoke to me, I took his flute, no, I wasn't that cute to him, was I? But I did it because he lied, and because he took you for a ride, and because time was on his side, and because I want you." Which is potentially a reference to Brian Jones from the Rolling Stones. Jones and Dylan had spent a bit of time together. In the documentary Rolling Stone, Life and Death of Brian Jones, it's claimed for a period that Jones would ring Dylan every single day. They even apparently took acid together. It's even rumoured that Dylan paid for a lavish casket for Jones, although this feels a little tabloid for me. The source for the Dylan-Jones theory comes from the line "Time is on his side," which could easily be referencing a Rolling Stone song from 1964 called "Time is on my side," which does feel like a nice Dylan reference type line. And also, it's not particularly relevant to the song, so it could just be a random little nod to Brian Jones thrown in. Regardless, the song remains a classic and one of Dylan's best pop moments. With I Want You, he not only put his most poppy song to date on tape, but he also captured the final song in an exhausting studio session. With the conclusion of I Want You on that final studio day, the music for the record was done. But while the music was finished, the album was not. It needed to be mixed and it needed to be mastered. And it also needed some artwork. And for that, Dylan returns to New York. That's something we look at next time. That is it for this episode. As always, thank you for listening. If you are incredibly boring like me, then you will have noticed on the new desktop version of Spotify, they have started to put the play count of songs, every song from kind of every different album. And unsurprisingly, I Want You is the most played song from Blonde on Blonde. That's not too surprising, is it really? I mean, that is such a big, big pop tune. Almost double the listens, though, of Just Like a Woman, which I was quite surprised about. And Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands, which I think, you know, many of us would agree is one of Dylan's best songs. Actually quite far back in terms of the most listened songs on the album. Stuck Inside a Mobile beats it, as does Visions of Johanna, which I guess isn't too surprising. And Rainy Day Women beats it as well. That's one of the biggest. In fact, that's played more than Visions of Johanna, which is interesting. I say interesting. Interesting it's loosest form possible, only to boring people like me. Thank you once again for listening to this episode. As I mentioned there, next time we'll have a look at the artwork, which has a couple of interesting stories around it, and the next two tracks on the album as well, Leopard Skin Pillbox Hat and Just Like a Woman. Just a quick reminder before I go, if you're a Patreon subscriber, keep your eye on the Patreon feed, because I'm going to do something with you and this album that is going to be really, really exciting. So keep your eye on that. Details will be announced very, very soon. In the meantime, take care of yourself. I will see you for episode 4 next week.
A Fueled by Coffee production.